Chapter 13. Just Another Day. Top hashtags on the Great Link. Hashtag wave. Hashtag toxic gas. Hashtag the reckoning. Hashtag Firefly reboot. The Great Link itself saw an uptick in activity of nearly 20% in the hours after the event.
"I've been saying it for years and none of you libtards listen. Toxic gas is being released."
"I've been saying it for years and you inbreds never listen. The ultra-rich have been experimenting on us for..."
"I've been saying it for years and you heathens will burn now that the time of reckoning has come. This is your last chance to call upon..."
"I've been saying it for years.
I've been.
The Great Link was filled with conspiracy theories, flame wars, and your basic Tuesday night insanity after the wave. Some said they knew exactly why the wave had happened. Others denied it had happened at all. Many were just there for the comments. Inside the ICU of Atlanta General, it was business as usual. If you could trust anyone to be reliable, it was an ICU nurse. In between checking on their patients, however, they were glued to the TV in the lounge.
"This is Reagan Watts with World Confederation News. We are here today to talk about what many are calling the wave. Approximately 6 hours ago, a beam of energy descended from outer space and struck the Atlantic Ocean. This created a wave-like phenomenon that spread across the surface of the planet at a speed fast enough to encompass the Earth in less than a minute. As of now, we are just gathering information and will continue to keep you updated on this world-shattering story. Joining me today are three experts. To my left is Wanda Fetter, chief astrophysicist of NASA Amazon. Immediately to my right is Daryl Jenkins, press secretary for the President of the Western Confederation. To my far right is Captain Raymond Travers, decorated hero of the Third War. Thank you all for joining me." A chorus of polite and low-volume thank yous echoed around the table. "Let's dive right in. Daryl, I know you wanted to issue a statement on behalf of the President."
"Yes," came the slightly nasal voice of the President's press secretary. "What is most important to know is that the government is working to keep you all safe. The President has acted swiftly and decisively to bring all of the considerable resources of the Western Confederation to bear, all with the goal of keeping you, the citizen, safe. Prices have been frozen. Trading on the World Stock Exchange has been frozen. Any lawlessness will be dealt with fairly but decisively. We promise complete transparency as we discover more information about the phenomenon that is being called the wave." With a final caricature of a smile, he added the President's catchphrase, "You are in good hands." Silence resounded for a solid 2 seconds as the other members responded to the press secretary's hollow platitudes. Reagan showed consummate professionalism by not even quivering an eyelid. Captain Travers' stony face just grew a bit stonier. No stranger to hearing idiocy from on high. Wanda's face was the most comical, not being dependent on the government at all. While NASA started as a U.S. agency, Amazon's acquisition during the war had placed it squarely in corporate control. Her expression could best be described as, "Give me a fucking break, you penis." She did show some restraint by not saying anything.
"Thank you for that message of hope," Reagan said evenly. If there was any sarcasm in those words, it was either too subtle for Daryl to pick up on, or the man was too obtuse to even allow for that option. The newscaster continued. "Miss Fetter, does NASA Amazon have any idea as to the nature of the wave?"
Wanda's face firmed and took on a professional cast.
"In the 6 hours since the event, we have gathered a great deal of information, but are still processing much of it. What we know is that the energy seemed to originate from deep space. Using telemetry from the few remaining orbital platforms that have yet to be decommissioned since the end of the war, we have a rough trajectory of the beam before it impacted Earth." She steeled her gaze, as if to make sure everyone heard her next words. "The origin of the beam does not coincide with any celestial body that has been tracked to date. I know that many are concerned that this may have been a type of attack from an extraterrestrial force. As of now, there is no evidence of that being the case."
Captain Perry spoke up.
"I'd like to second this. The only damage that has been reported throughout the Confederation so far is what we are doing ourselves. The urge to panic is normal, but I urge you to remember we are stronger when we work together. We are stronger when we stand together.
Somehow, when he said it, though the message was similar, it didn't ring hollow like when the press secretary had spoken. The charge nurse muted the screen before telling everyone to get back to work. The staff scurried off to attend to their duties, no one wanting to incur the wrath of the ward witch, as she was commonly called. The matronly woman was extremely kind to her patients and her families, but God help any staff that were seen to be slacking. After seeing one nurse put on fecal disimpaction for a month straight, you learned it was best to stay on the ward witch's good side. Only one nurse hung back. One with just as much experience, and more importantly, years of friendship with the charge nurse. Though he'd never admit it, he secretly took pleasure in the fact that the nickname he had come up with years ago had stuck.
"What do you think about what happened, Maddie?" Jim asked.
"I think I already said we need to get back to work," she responded waspishly.
After getting a long look from one of her few friends, she relented. In a gentler voice, pitched low enough that no one else could hear and have proof of her kindness, she continued,
"What I really think is that the same thing will happen as every time people are given a reason to be afraid."
The next words she whispered as well, but this time it was out of sorrow.
"I think things are going to get bad."
With that pronouncement, she turned back to her work. A new patient had just come in, apparently the sole survivor of an auto accident. Finn slowly woke up, completely confused. Initially, he had no idea what was going on, but when he tried to rub his eyes, he found that he'd been restrained. Anger flooded him, and a bestial panic came with it. Then memory came back, all of it in a rush. Lauren's death, the drunk asshole who'd taken her from him, and the car exploding. After that, everything was black, but he didn't care what he'd missed. Why wasn't he dead?
"No, no, why aren't I dead? Lauren, Lauren, I want to be with her,"
he screamed. His throat felt like rusty razor blades. He screamed again and again, straining against his bonds, until a doctor rushed into the room. She tried to call his name, but Finn was driven mad by everything that had happened. It didn't help that he was seeing things, like words sprawled across his vision and blinking lights in the corner of his eyes. A needle jabbed into his thigh, injecting 2 cc's of Ativan. When that barely calmed him, it was followed by 5 mg of Haldol. His struggles finally quelled. Finn continued to speak Lauren's name in even iterations that became more garbled until the blessed darkness of sleep claimed him. The doctor looked at him in pity, having read the police report when he was brought in. The man had somehow survived a fuel cell explosion. Even though the burns covering the front of his body were miraculously only first degree, he was suffering from internal injuries that were much more serious. The surgeons were honestly stumped how he'd gotten hit with such a hard blast without the burns to match. They'd just shrugged it off, though, unknowingly parroting the 2 police that had found him, calling Finn, "lucky son of a bitch." Shrugging, the surgical team took the win and moved on. They'd kept the guy breathing, which meant their job was basically done. Over the next 24 hours, Finn went in and out of consciousness, delirious most of the time. When the doctor came back on shift the next day, though, he was laying there calmly, staring up at the ceiling. As she entered the room, he turned his head, ignoring the pain triggered by even that simple movement, and evenly asked,
"Will you take these restraints off, please?"
He'd woken up several hours before. Agony, both physical and emotional, radiated through his entire body, but he'd regained enough control to assess his situation. At first, he'd thought he was handcuffed to the bed.
"They arrested me for killing that man."
In the next moment, he'd shrugged mentally and stopped pulling at his restraints. He didn't regret snatching the life out of that bastard. He just wished he could have done it twice. If a lifetime in jail was the cost, he'd pay it gladly.
"Lauren,
The thought of her name had caused a worse pain than any he was already feeling. Tears flowed, and he sobbed, unable to even wipe his eyes. Sometime over the next hour, he'd fallen asleep once more. The next time he woke, his head had been much clearer. Both the emotional fugue and the several rounds of medication that had kept him snowed for the past 24 hours had faded enough for him to better assess his situation. There was no way he should be under arrest right now. The accident would show the rich prick's hover truck had slammed into them. Even if the cops did know he'd played a role in killing the driver of the other car, they wouldn't have been able to prove that he'd done anything. Hell, he didn't even understand what he'd done. He just knew he'd done something. Looking down for the first time, he'd seen that while he was indeed restrained, it was not with shackles of metal. Instead, his bindings were cloth, and his hands were covered by mesh mittens. He'd seen this plenty of times before, though he'd never worn them himself. This was how hospitals kept AMS, altered mental status, patients from hurting themselves or pulling out IVs. Seeing that had cleared up his situation immensely. That was why, an hour later, he was taking extra efforts to speak calmly and without emotion. Ranting and demanding restraints come off was a good way to get put on an involuntary psych hold. The best course of action was just to wait for the doctor to come in and ask for his freedom, exuding as much stability as possible. When he saw the small woman enter with a stethoscope around her neck and a paper mask over her face, he knew his wait was over. Finn carefully cracked one eye. Now that he was clear-headed, he was sure he was suffering from a concussion. Not only was there a constant ringing in his ears, but he could barely tolerate much light.
Dr. Yingying?
He spoke aloud to the woman standing by his bedside.
Could I ask you a small favor?
His initial entreaty didn't garner a response. Carefully shifting his head, he turned his slitted eye to look up at her face. He saw she was looking down at him, but wasn't speaking. Maybe she was somewhat taken aback by his calm demeanor after a full day of hysterical raving.
Dr. Yingying,
Finn tried again, reading her tag. He made his voice as level and moderate as possible.
Would it be possible to turn down the lights? I'm fairly certain I suffered a concussion in the accident.
Of course, she responded after a moment. Leaning over, she tapped a key on the bed. The overheads reduced from a bright white glare to a gentle twilight.
Sighing in faint relief, Finn opened his eyes wider. They were both blurry from lack of blinking, but after a few moments, he was able to open them fully without discomfort. Turning his head, he looked at his doctor again, clearly seeing her for the first time. She was about 5'3", had the pale golden skin of an Asian woman, with the eyes to match. He couldn't see any more of her face due to the surgical mask she had up. Above, however, her straight black hair was pulled back into a tight ponytail. Not a single strand was out of place, something Finn remarked was a bit strange for an overworked ICU doc. Seeing something physically aberrant, his doctor eyes kicked in, and he did a more thorough visual exam. Her skin was smooth and without flaw. Not a wrinkle or pimple. He'd thought her skin looked smooth because of makeup, but looking closer, she wasn't wearing any. Her eyebrows appeared perfectly manicured as well.
For an intensivist to put that much care into her appearance, she must be a real tight ass,
Finn thought. Of course, he didn't let any of that show on his face. Instead, he stuck to the plan to achieve his goal. He continued in a measured tone.
Would you please remove these restraints? I understand why I had to be tied down, but I'm an ER physician. At the time I was brought in, I believe I was suffering from both physical and emotional trauma. To be more specific, traumatic loss of a loved one coupled with what feels to be a severe concussion. That triggered what any physician would acknowledge to be a normal physiologic grief reflex. You and your staff have my apologies for any untoward behavior I may have exhibited. I completely understand and agree with your decision to restrain me in light of that temporary derangement. I'm now clear-headed and calm. I will, of course, bow to your medical decision-making as you are the physician in charge. That being said, I'm fine now, and would greatly appreciate the professional courtesy of being released. Please.
She looked at him dispassionately, her clear hazel eyes unblinking.
It's pronounced Yi-ing, she corrected after a few moments.
There was no anger or irritation in her voice. He didn't let even a trace cross his face, either. One, he guessed people butchering her name was a common occurrence. And two, an offhand comment was just the kind of tricksy trick a doctor would pull on a patient to assess their mental state without them knowing.
Thank you for the correction, Dr. Yi-ing.
This time, he used the right inflection. After several more moments, she responded,
You're welcome, Dr. Evers. You do seem clear-headed. And what you ask certainly sounds like a reasonable request. If you truly are fine, however, then you should be okay with some questions. Would that be all right, Dr. Evers?
Finn took a breath to respond and was rewarded by a painful hacking cough. Once the fit passed, he replied with a slight wheeze.
Of course. But please call me Finn.
I would rather keep this professional and respectful, she responded in a measured voice. Please address me as Dr. Yi-ing, and I will afford you the same courtesy.
Whatever you say, Dr. Yi-ing,
he responded evenly. Internally, he sighed. He'd been right. She was a tad. Just another tight-assed doctor.
I would appreciate keeping the interview short. The ringing in my ears is a bit painful and is exacerbated by sound.
Of course, Dr. Evers. Let us begin.
For the next several minutes, she went through standard questions. How do you feel? Does this hurt? What do you remember about the accident? Then they got to the meat of the matter.
The nurse reported that you said you wanted to die. Is that still the case?
It was what he'd been waiting for. Staring deep into her eyes, he intoned,
I do not want to harm or kill myself. I'm not having suicidal or homicidal ideation. I was suffering from trauma and acute loss. I am not a danger to myself. My fiancé was just killed, and that was why, coupled with my head injury and disorientation, I said I wanted to join her. That is not how I truly feel.
Well, Dr. Yi-ing said in a professionally neutral voice, that certainly is a complete answer.
After staring for a few seconds more, she called out,
Nurse, help me remove these restraints.
Several minutes later, Finn scratched his nose with a grunt of pure relief.
You have no idea how long I've needed to do that.
Immediate concerns done, he asked the two questions that were burning inside of him.
Where is my fiancé's body?
She stared at him for a moment, sympathy creasing her eyes above her mask.
She was taken to the morgue. It's only a block away.
A single tear fell from one of his eyes. Finn didn't turn away or feel the need to wipe it. This was his pain. He'd earned it. Dr. Yi-ing started to speak again, but he waved her to stop. With a completely different tone, a harsh, guttural intonation, he asked his second question.
Were there any other survivors from the crash?
He knew there couldn't be. He knew that he'd seen that green-eyed bastard burn. In that strange, frozen moment of the explosion, he'd seen blue fire consume the man's perfect, screaming face. Finn remembered clearly the arrogant beauty of those refined features melting, the skin running like liquid wax. He recalled even better how he'd rejoiced while he'd watched it. He didn't know why the fuel cell had exploded, but he knew everything else. But on the same token, Finn knew there was no way he should be alive, either. While Dr. Yi-ing had been asking him questions before taking off the restraints, she'd mentioned that he was lucky to have been so far from the truck when it exploded. When he'd asked how she knew that, she'd shared that she'd spoken with the EMS who'd brought him to the hospital. Apparently, that was what the cops had said before he'd been picked up at the scene. His unconscious body had been found dozens of yards from the blast. Finn had been impressed with Dr. Yi-ing when he heard about the extra effort she'd made. Not many doctors outside the ER ever spoke to EMS. Hierarchical arrogance was alive and well in Western medicine. For obvious reasons, he hadn't corrected her assumption that he'd been far from the explosion. He knew that he'd been right at ground zero, though. No matter what movies showed, people didn't survive when they were next to an explosion. It just didn't happen in real life. He'd seen the aftermath of explosives during the war, what they'd done to bodies, turning people into ground chuck. And he'd seen the aftermath of hundreds of car accidents in the ER. He should be dead. More than dead. He should be in chunks. There was no earthly reason that he should still be here. Which left only one explanation. Something extraordinary had intervened. Something that had to be related to that gray wave. And if a supernatural force had saved his life, if the rules and natural laws he'd always believed in now had an asterisk next to them, then he had to consider the possibility that that murderous bastard was still alive as well. If that were the case, the highest priority in Finn's life would be correcting that. Dr. Yiying paused for a few seconds, partly because of the vehemence in Finn's voice, before replying, "I'm not sure it is my place to speak about this." Finn calmed his voice. Pushing doctors wasn't the way to get what you wanted. You had to appeal to their sympathy and their ego. He looked away before trying again, his voice weak and quavering now.
"I know. I get it. It's not right for me to ask. He just took her from me. He killed..."
Finn clipped the last word, selling his pitiable persona. The simple motion of turning helped him bring the performance home. Fresh pain shot through him as cracked ribs ground together. His eyes tightened as a spasm washed through him. A stressed wheeze passed through his lips. The pain meds were really starting to wear off. Dr. Yiying started to get up from her chair and call for a nurse, but he held up a hand, stopping her. Turning back over brought a fresh wave of suffering, but he was sure the unshed tears he'd summoned would get the job done now. He reached out and grabbed her hand. Not harshly, but with strength. She settled back down, and he repeated himself.
"It's not right for me to ask, but I'm asking. As a professional courtesy, or out of sympathy to an injured man, or just out of pity, no matter what reason you need, please. Please tell me if the man that killed the love of my life is dead."
Emotions warred behind her eyes, but after the battle, she leaned towards him and quietly shared,
"According to EMS, no one else survived. They heard the police talking. Another person's remains were found charred at the scene. The body was so badly damaged they had to pull the ID from the car. For privacy reasons, they did not share the name of anyone else with me."
If she had learned the name of the man in the other car, fate would have taken a very different turn. The name Yarini Lotus was one she would have recognized. He was a member of a group she was intimately familiar with. In fact, her familia and the Lotus tried to have as little to do with one another as possible. If she'd known about a rival familia's involvement, she might have given her patient a warning. She wouldn't have broken her familia's code of silence, of course. She might still have warned Finn that the other man was part of a gang. There was no danger while Finn was in the hospital. It was Shadow territory, after all. And no Lotus member would risk war with the Shadow over petty revenge against a civilian. Once he was discharged, though, and beyond the protection of these walls, she'd have had no doubt the Lotus would live up to its vindictive and cruel reputation. She might even have petitioned her familia to label Finn off-limits, citing the need to protect the honor and reputation of the Shadow. That kind of stupid argument usually was enough to rile the elders up. Unfortunately, the doctor remained unaware of the storm on the horizon. She merely watched Finn as he heaved a sigh of contentment.
A faint smile graced his mouth, even though the rest of his face was tight with pain. He closed his eyes and thought of his love.
"I know you wanted me to be a better man, baby, but I got him. I got the fucker that took you from me."
An image of Lauren's face appeared in his mind's eye. She had a faint smile on her face, but when he focused on the curve of her lips, He couldn't shake the feeling that she was looking at him in sadness.
Dr. Evers? Dr. Evers? Finn?
Dr. Yiying's voice broke his reverie, and Lauren's face faded away. Opening his eyes, Finn focused on his doctor and asked the next pertinent question.
How messed up am I?
Dr. Yiying's head cocked to the side as if to say, well... Turned out the answer to his question was just shy of foobar. 7 cracked ribs, a broken leg, hairline jaw fracture, internal bleeding, acute kidney failure, and the entire front of his body was covered in burns. His recovery would take weeks, maybe months. After getting the news, he realized none of that mattered. Lauren was gone, and despite the lies he'd just told this woman, he wasn't sure if he was going to stick around in this life much longer. For now, it was a non-issue. He wasn't in a position to walk, let alone end his life. He also wasn't an impetuous person. Finn had survived the war, and somehow, unreasonably, had survived being blown up. If he did decide to go out, it would be on his own terms. Nothing would be left to chance. There was also that other thing. Just as Dr. Yiying was about to leave the room, she paused in the doorway before turning back. He was struck by how poised she was. Her posture was perfect, and she moved with a grace he'd only seen in professional dancers. That didn't quite add up with what he knew about ICU docs. They were more the married to the job and pale from lack of sunlight types. Despite that grace, he could pick up on her hesitation. If her mask was down, he had a suspicion he'd see her chewing her lip.
Dr. Evers, she began.
He waved his hand.
Please just call me Finn.
This time, she allowed it for some reason.
Finn, she repeated. Is there anything else you want to tell me about the accident?
She looked at him with an intensity he didn't quite understand. There had to be 12 other people on her service, and if there was one thing doctors never had enough of, it was time. Also, he'd interviewed thousands of patients and knew that doctors just didn't pay this much attention to someone medically stable. The only thing he could think that would warrant this level of scrutiny was if she knew his true mental state, but he was sure he hadn't given anything away. Wanting to break the weird intensity of the moment, he asked a question that he was confident would redirect her.
Did you see that gray wave?
She nodded, her face tightening slightly at the memory.
That's actually what the news is calling it. The wave. It traveled through the whole world. Everyone saw it. Everyone in the world that was awake, anyway. There have been reports of it from every country on Earth. But no one knows what it was, and there don't seem to be any long-term effects. At least, not that anyone has reported.
Her vision sharpened again.
Is there anything you want to tell me about the wave? That must have been right before your accident.
His eyes flickered ever so slightly to the left, towards the blinking light that seemed on the edge of his vision, before staring back into her dark brown eyes again. Sighing heavily, he closed his eyes and feigned weariness.
I'm sorry, Dr. Yiying. I just got tired all of a sudden. Do you mind asking the nurse bring me my link? I'd like to touch base with loved ones before I get to sleep.
She paused for a moment, recognizing that he was ending the conversation. But what could she say except,
of course.
Thanks, Doc. Appreciate your time.
The way his eye had fluttered had caught her attention and raised her suspicions, but not enough that she could push without revealing the fact that she had an interface of her own. Her lips parted slightly, and a faint exhalation passed through them, but she caught whatever words were going to spill out.
Call me Sola, she said softly, taking her mask off.
Despite his pain and loss, Finn caught himself staring at her beautiful face. She had Asian features, most likely Japanese, he thought. Her face was strangely symmetric, and a dainty nose rested perfectly above full lips that didn't quite fit the rest of her features, but didn't ruin her beauty in any way. Instead, they complemented and elevated it. Finn didn't feel a wisp of arousal or true attraction. Neither his mind nor his body were in a place for that. It was just that her beauty was striking enough that it was impossible not to pause and take note of it. like someone over 7 feet tall, or a man with arms more than a foot thick. It just wasn't something you saw very often. In fact, her beauty not only didn't trigger a positive reaction, it kindled his anger. Her perfect features reminded Finn of the asshole in the truck. Her Asian attributes were nothing like Yerini's Aryan looks, but both had a quality that seemed not quite normal.
Well, he thought with bloody satisfaction, he's not so pretty anymore.
He didn't let her beauty distract him for more than an instant, and he quashed his anger. It didn't serve a purpose right now. Instead, he responded,
thank you, Sola. I need to rest now, if you don't mind.
Of course. The physical and occupational therapists will be by later to help with your recovery. And now that you're more aware, we'll be getting you out of the ICU. Should I send the nurse in to give you something for your pain?
Please,
he replied quietly, closing his eyes. He had held off so he could be clear-headed when he met his doctor, but the morphine he'd gotten before was having little effect anymore. Sola paused at the door, fishing one final time.
Evers. It's such an interesting name. It almost sounds made up.
All words are made up,
he responded evenly and without opening his eyes. Her head pulled back ever so slightly at the irrefutability of that statement. After thinking a moment, she just left the room, closing the glass door but leaving the curtain open. This man was a mystery, but there were other ways to find the truth if he wouldn't share. Finn's eyes stayed closed, but he didn't sleep. He was reading. He'd intentionally not done so earlier, choosing instead to face the pain and loss. It would have felt like a betrayal if he'd numbed himself after Lauren's death. That wasn't his way. Now, a day had passed. He'd sat his shiva. Was that how it worked? He wasn't Jewish and hadn't ever paid that much attention, but he'd liked the idea when he'd heard about it. Despite the fact that the pain was just as strong, the truth was he was emotionally exhausted. Soon he'd be rested enough to flay his soul again, but for now, a distraction would be nice. Besides, his curiosity was rising, and he knew the pain wasn't going anywhere. He still couldn't quite believe what was happening, but he wasn't some hidebound fool who would deny what was right in front of his face. Only the truly foolish and truly powerful reimagined facts to fit their views. Whatever that wave had been, it had changed him. It had changed something inside of him. The words emblazoned across his vision were proof. Congratulations! Your connection to the labyrinth has been enabled.